What is that when you jump around and carry on and do the who dat stuff?
Who dat? You know, that's really kind of a fan. You know, that's our chant.
Duncan Holder podcast back at you here on the Athletics Podcast Network. Larry Holder, Jeff Duncan here with you post NFL draft, and obviously plenty to talk about here with the Saints only making three picks all in the first 2 days, which was certainly unexpected. Then the news of a veteran backup quarterback who many a Saints fan is familiar with will now be joining the Saints. That's Jameis Winston. Oh, and then, by the way, the Saints ink Taysom Hill to a 2-year deal. What does all of that mean? Of course, we're going to talk all about that. But, of course, if you're listening to this podcast, A, thank you. B, tell all your friends. You can go Apple, Spotify, wherever your podcasts. You go get those. Rate, review, subscribe, do all those good things. Then, of course, theathletic.com/Duncan Holder. You can jump on there. Not only listen to our podcast, but all of our great content. It has been overload. It has been incredible. What a great company we work for with all the draft assets and everything going forward, local, national basis. We've got all that covered. TheAthletic.com/Duncan Holder, 40% off of a subscription. But Jeff, let's just start with the most recent and polarizing news of this weekend. Jameis Winston. Obviously, we are certainly familiar with Jameis Winston. If anybody is familiar with Jameis Winston's strengths and weaknesses outside of Bruce Arians, it would be Sean Payton, who has seen him play many, many years now, the past 4 years against Tampa Bay. And so, Jeff, just your initial reaction when you saw Jameis Winston now becoming a New Orleans Saint, at least for one season.
Well, hell, I was surprised, I have to admit. I mean, we started hearing word of this like about the last 48 hours. It seemed like it was trending that way, but I wasn't going to believe it until I actually saw it officially happen. And it's surprising for a number of reasons. I mean, one, they're in the same division. Two, Jameis Winston has a history of off-field character issues. You read a lot of positive things about him and hear a lot of positive things about him from his teammates and coaches in Tampa, but he's had some off-field transgressions, there's no doubt. And three, the thing that resonates with me is just that he got into a huge fight a couple of years ago with the Saints that upset a lot of players, including Sean Payton. Now, I know that was a one-time incident, but that just it seems like curious bedfellows, if you will. But when you look at it just strictly from a football perspective, it makes a lot of sense for both sides, and I can see why it came to this.
And, Jeff, it's funny because a couple of years ago, of course, the Saints traded for Teddy Bridgewater, and it's a similar situation, except I feel like exact opposite personality traits on the football field and off the football field. You mentioned Winston, and, of course, some of the issues that has followed him since college and then into the NFL. I think that's one reason why I know Saints fans are probably scratching their heads about this. And yet, the on-the-field issues, he's the exact opposite of Teddy Bridgewater. He is not careful with the football. He could certainly make some dynamic plays in the passing game. But I just remember back in the offseason, and Jeff, you remember this, how Tampa Bay, if they don't sign Tom Brady, they're probably signing Teddy Bridgewater, which means they were going after the opposite of Jameis Winston, who is more of a humble guy, a guy who's careful with the football. They were going against the opposite of the grain with Jameis Winston. Of course, now Teddy's in Carolina. Jameis is now in New Orleans. And also, Jeff, I could see, from, like you say, a football standpoint and a logistical standpoint, they're using the same playbook, as in probably the best and most dynamic backup on the market right now, veteran backup, and they want to go the same route a la Teddy Bridgewater in case something happens to Drew Brees. And the plan to me, though, going forward, and this is another topic we're going to go into, is that, look, Jameis will be a one-year thing, and then they're still going with Taysom as being the guy.
Yeah, I mean, it makes a lot of sense for Jameis Winston and his camp. Obviously, there was not that big a market for his services as a starter. Pretty much everything filled up in free agency. He was going to have to try and take the Teddy Bridgewater route, go in, become a backup, learn what you can from a future Hall of Famer, and then hope the market opens up again for a starting spot next year. It worked for Teddy Bridgewater, and certainly would be, I think, a more attractive situation for Jameis Winston than, say, going to a losing team and competing maybe for a starting spot, or maybe hoping the starter falters and you can get the starting spot down the road. This seems like a much more attractive situation for him too. So it makes a lot of sense, more so I think for Winston than the Saints. I think from the Saints' perspective, you and I talked about this before we recorded the podcast, I don't think the market was very strong for backup quarterbacks for the Saints. I think there were very limited options, and clearly Jameis Winston, a guy that's played in the Pro Bowl, was a former number one overall pick, and you know, is coming off a 5,000-yard passing season. You're not going to get very many better options than that. As long as he comes in, understands his role, understands the vision the Saints have for him, which I'm sure was spelled out in great detail by Sean Payton to him and his representatives before he ever even signed.
Yeah, I don't think this is just what just happened. And like, as in all of a sudden, boop, they snapped their fingers and got something done today. I mean, this has probably been in the works for a while. Credit our own Mike Sando, who initially brought this up while we were at the Combine about offseason moves with quarterbacks. He pegged Jameis Winston as a guy that would fit with the Saints because Sean Payton knows what he's doing with quarterbacks. It would be just like Teddy Bridgewater. Like, I scoffed at the idea just thinking, man, what direction would the Saints not want to go with someone who is careless with the football? And as we mentioned, character flaws, that would be Jameis Winston. So I kind of scoffed at the idea, and yet this is where we are. And so, look, I understand part of the logic as far as it's basically the same emergency valve as Teddy Bridgewater, because the Saints have talked about it. Sean Payton's talked about it. Taysom's still going to be the same Taysom this year as he has been in the past couple of years. And they would need a number three quarterback that would be active on game day. That is going to be Jameis Winston, even as we'll talk later on in the podcast, even though they drafted Tommy Stevens in the seventh round, moving back up into the draft. But Jeff, yeah, I just think that everyone who sees this move is could either have a sharp reaction one way or a sharp reaction the other way. It's not so much the, you know, I'm not going to say indifference, because I think people thought Teddy Bridgewater might become the heir apparent to Drew Brees, and Teddy Bridgewater isn't as polarizing as Jameis. But I can understand the mixed emotions coming from the Hoodats around town.
Yeah, because, I mean, this is a division rival. The Saints have had a lot of really, gosh, I know, like bitter fights with this team. I mean, it goes back more so than just that Mike Evans, Marshawn Lattimore, Jameis Winston kind of a fracas a couple of years ago. I mean, they've Jameis Winston, of course, you remember, I think you and I were there down in Tampa, beat the Saints a couple of years ago in the last game of the season on a last second touchdown pass. They've had a lot of really hard fought games against Tampa. And he seems like, in so many ways, the anti-New Orleans Saint. You know, he's had these off-field transgressions. He's kind of, frankly, he's kind of goofy. But, you know, if you really dig deep on him, and I've talked to some people today that covered him down in Tampa, I think it speaks well that Bruce Arians has been championing his cause, that he called around to other teams trying to convince them to sign Winston. I don't think he would do that if he thought he was a bad apple. And the player, the reporters I've talked to all say he's a very hard worker. All of his teammates like him. I know he just got married this offseason. So, you know, sometimes we forget, Larry. I mean, I do a lot. I forget this a lot. We have to remind ourselves, these guys are young. You know, they come in the league very young. And I'm not trying to make excuses, but sometimes players do mature later. And maybe the light bulb will come on for Jameis Winston off the field, and he can resurrect his career by basically getting a one-year training session behind Drew Brees.
And if he ever plays, the Saints are probably in not best shape, because that would mean Drew Brees would not be on the field again, because we could go back to where it was 2018 and Teddy Bridgewater never touched the field until week 17. So we could be, we're making this a big deal now just because of the polarizing figure that is Jameis Winston. But on a lighter note, my goodness, Jeff, if anyone wants the spokesperson of Jameis Winston to promote their boiled seafood place, like Bevy or Salvo's, my place in Belle Chasse, Jameis has to be your guy. Crab legs and all. We have to show him how to mess with crawfish. He would be your guy. He would rack in the endorsements. Rouse's. Why not let him go do that? I mean, Brandon Cooks was a spokesman for Rouse's, for crying out loud, just because his last name is Cooks. I mean, have Winston back, like, digging out lobster, boiling crawfish. He'd be your perfect guy. Instant. He'd be the next Letta Have It, like in the old school commercials for Frankie and Johnny's, the old furniture store here in New Orleans.
I think the W Hotel ought to sign him as a sponsor.
Oh, gosh. I didn't even think about that.
You need a W or whatever. Whatever the restaurant is in the hotel.
No. Oh, no.
He might,
you're welcome,
end up,
Jameis.
He might end up banking some sponsorship dollars. But, I mean, it's a crazy turn of events. There's no doubt about it. But I really believe if there were a better option out there, the Saints might have gone in another direction. In other words, if there were a Luke McCown or a Chase Daniel, I know Chase Daniel was out there, but he got a big-time deal. I think if one of those guys were out there that were more conducive to their salary structure, they might have gone in another direction. But they're not going to get somebody more talented than him, I don't think, unless you have a healthy Cam Newton. And that was probably not an option right now.
And let's transition. Taysom Hill, right after the news was breaking about Jameis Winston, we knew that the Saints were going to try to get something done with Taysom Hill outside of the restricted free agent tender, and they did. 2-year deal, reportedly about $21 million maxing out for 2 years. So that's an average of about $10 million a year. And so, Jeff, the Saints were ready to pay him $4 million this year. They'll probably stick to that number, and then the number will probably jump next year, and it'll be below kind of the starting line of a starting quarterback, but quarterback money. And so I think the 2-year deal with Taysom is advantageous to both Taysom and the Saints, to where Taysom's going to get paid, 2-year deal, and yet the Saints are still saying, look, Taysom, we believe in you, but you're going to have to prove it when we turn the ball over to you, likely in 2021.
Yeah, for all intents and purposes, this to me indicated what the organization thinks, and that is that this is Drew Brees' last year. I mean, we know there's a lot of speculation. Sean Payton pretty much tipped his hand when he said it earlier this year, but you don't give him $16 million next year unless you think he's going to be the starting quarterback. I don't think they could afford to pay Brees and him that. Maybe they can afford it, but certainly would tax their salary cap. So all indications are that he's going to get basically a 1-year shot to potentially be the starting quarterback. And then if he is, I bet midway through the 2021 season, they'd probably try and lock him up to a long-term deal if they like what they see. So it makes sense. It gives the Saints a little bit of an out if it doesn't pan out, if he's the complete disaster as a starter. It's really a lot like, frankly, what the Saints did the very first time they signed Drew Brees. I know everybody remembers it one way, and that is that they signed him to a $10 million a year deal. So I think it was $60 million, 6 years. But if you remember, Larry, they had basically a 1-year option that they could get out of that deal and cut their losses if Drew did not come back from his shoulder injury and it didn't pan out for either side. So there was a safety net or safety valve for the organization, and I think they're doing it this way with Taysom Hill as well.
And look, if it doesn't pan out, then they could probably go draft a guy, you know. So it's something that the Saints have confidence and want to give him a shot, but also enough leeway to where they could go in a different direction if they feel like that's the case. But, Jeff, do you feel like Jameis would be an option to compete maybe with Taysom, as we're all at this point assuming that this is it the last year for Drew Brees?
I don't think so. I mean, I don't think Sean Payton will ever say that publicly. I think he will trot the company line. But Jameis Winston's not a Saints Sean Payton type quarterback. I know he said positive things about him in the past, but I just can't see it. I just do not see a player that makes that many mistakes fitting in with Sean Payton. Sean Payton will kill him. He just will. It would not work. It would be a terrible marriage. I think this is strictly a marriage of convenience. Sean Payton and the Saints need a veteran guy for this one season where they're going to try and go for it again and win a Super Bowl. And Jameis Winston needs a little bit of a rehab and basically a training year to get his career back in order. So it's convenient for both teams or sides.
I'm with you. I would not anticipate this going past this year. And look, if something were to happen where Jameis Winston goes knucklehead again, then they just cut him again. I mean, like that's part of this too. I mean, I don't expect that to happen, but that has happened in the past. So if that happens, look, I'm sure there's not a lot that the Saints would be willing to put up with. And if he becomes some sort of distraction, I think they would cut ties with him, a la just kind of with the Adrian Peterson thing, where it was too much hubbub around what was going on, and they would cut ties. Not that Adrian Peterson was a problem maybe inside the locker room, but, you know, he wasn't getting played, this, that, and the other. And so, look, I would see it that way. But Jeff, as far as with where the Saints go after this draft, look, we've gotten their draft. And we'll go through some of these picks and the logic behind some of this stuff as the podcast moves on. But Jeff, as far as after this draft, what do you see still? Maybe there's a question or two on the roster, not necessarily maybe position battles, because we know some are coming on the offensive line. But do you see any hole that you're thinking, man, you wish they would have at least looked at and have to look at going forward?
I think they probably could use another veteran backup offensive tackle maybe. You know, I could see them. I remember last year they had Marshall Newhouse in camp. He ended up not making it.
Right.
But I think they'll bring somebody like that in to compete. They may feel comfortable with using Pete now as their swing tackle like they've done in the past, but it certainly wouldn't surprise me to see them bring in a veteran on a minimum contract to compete and find somebody they like. And I think they could probably use another veteran linebacker. You know, I could see them adding a guy to the depth chart there just to come in, and because they're pretty thin at linebacker. That's the one area, even with the selection of Zach Bond, who I really like. I know we're going to talk about him, but they're pretty thin there. And there's certainly, if you're a veteran linebacker on the market, you could look at that depth chart and say, you know, I might be able to come in there and make the team. But it would have to be somebody that could come in and contribute on special teams. And I know that's an area that Sean Payton has talked a lot about. And I think that fits in with the Tommy Stevens selection too, because I think he's going to probably try and compete for an active roster spot as a special teamer. I don't know if he'll make it that way. I think he's probably bound for the practice squad. But special teams is going to be, from here on out, it's probably going to be a top priority for anyone they sign.
Yeah, I think all those make sense. Jeff, I'd also wonder about cornerback. I know that's a position that they mentioned publicly, Sean Payton did, earlier this month as something that they would look at there. And obviously they did not address that in the draft. They brought PJ Williams back, but he's a one-year deal guy. And so where do they turn there? Maybe they look at a veteran somewhere on a cheaper deal. But I feel like even though they've got bodies there and familiar bodies at cornerback, I think maybe that they might take a peek somewhere else like that, because I felt like if the right corner was there, they probably would have drafted him. I think that'd been something that you would like, because they know Janoris Jenkins, he'll be here this year, maybe not next year. So that might be something that they take a look at. And if they don't, I think that would become a priority next year in the draft if Janoris Jenkins, if they'd move on from him. So that's something we could look at. But all right, let's go through some of the draft. I know we mentioned and did a podcast right after the Cesar Ruiz pick on Thursday night. But if A, you forgot, or B, didn't listen, shame on you. But C, we will get first some insight from our Michigan writer from The Athletic, Austin Meek. He broke down some of what Cesar Ruiz would bring to the table, and let's hear from Austin right now.
Cesar Ruiz was a two-year starter at Michigan, came to Michigan as a highly recruited player out of IMG Academy, played some as a freshman at guard, stepped in as a starting center as a sophomore, and has really been an anchor for Michigan the last 2 years. Moves well for a guy his size. His ability to block in space is something that his coaches have talked about. If you look back at Michigan's game against Notre Dame in October, you'll see plays where Michigan is pulling him from the center spot, using him as a lead blocker in the run game. That's something that he does very well. A versatile player, could play guard or center at the next level, although center is probably his natural position. Had a choice to make after the Citrus Bowl, whether to come back or declare for the draft. He decided to declare. Still has some development to do physically and in terms of his technique, but all the tools are there for him to be a multi-year starter in the NFL.
And Jeff, again, this is a pick that I know you touted a couple of weeks ago on the podcast here, taking him in your mock draft when we did the mock draft simulation. He's certainly someone that I thought the Saints would be interested in. I wasn't totally sure at 24, but I felt like if the Saints would have made a move trading down in round one, he would have been a perfect fit for them. High in round two, he would have been a perfect fit. So, and I've gotten some maybe a little bit of kickback here because he wasn't rated by our own Dane Brugler as necessarily in the top 32. He was within the top 40. But people are saying, look, this is a reach, and then wondering about Patrick Queen. But I think you and me understand the logic behind this pick. And I think as the days have gone on, some other people who may have been naysayers kind of understand the logic around the pick. And then if you hear the way Sean Payton described the pick after day one, it was apparent that the Saints were going to go after this player or someone like him early in this draft.
Yeah, and I found out talking to some people over the weekend that the Saints were really high on Kenneth Murray. I know that's crazy, right, Larry? The linebacker in the first round that I would admit.
That was my guy. That was one of my guys I loved for a long time.
They were very high. I think they had the same grade on him as they did Ruiz. So it would have been interesting to see, and if you notice what happened, the Chargers traded up right ahead of the Saints and took Murray. But if they didn't, or if somebody else would have been selected there, it would have been interesting to see if they would have taken Murray over Ruiz. But I think they would have been happy with either one. They both are prime examples of what you want in a first-round draft pick. Not only are they value picks, they were both players that they have graded in their top 40, maybe even their top 20. But both of them also address positions that the Saints feel like they have a need at. And I think Ruiz, the attractive thing about him, not only does he fit all the Saints prototypes physically, and character-wise, all the things he's actually someone with the Saints tell me this weekend that they think he'll be a team captain in about 2 or 3 years and be one of those guys that's like kind of a Zach Strieff type in the locker room. But Ruiz also has position flexibility. He can flip out to guard. He played guard. He can play center. I think actually he's probably more comfortable at center. So it wouldn't surprise me if down the road, you and I have talked about this before, Larry Warford's probably in his final year here. It wouldn't surprise me if Eric McCoy ends up making that transition out to guard. He seems a little more, conducive to that than Ruiz just in the way they play. But I think the big key with Ruiz is he basically solidifies their offensive line now for the next 2 or 3 years with the signing of Andres Pete. I know they picked up the option on Ryan Ramczyk, and now you've got Ruiz along with McCoy to go with Terron Armstead. This line's going to be set for at least 2 more years.
And Jeff, I think when you look at the Ruiz pick, and you mentioned Larry Warford, boy, I would not be surprised if Warford is traded in training camp. You get to that point, and a team needs some offensive linemen. I think he's going to be circled with a star by any team needing interior offensive line help. And who knows? He might actually be gone before we even get there. I mean, I think even though Sean Payton said, look, Larry Warford's got to compete for his job, he said that publicly once they took Ruiz, and then they also said that they didn't draft Ruiz to be a backup. So I think that is this is about as open and transparent as I've seen anyone about within the time Sean Payton's been here called out publicly that this is it. And so this is, to me, kind of something eye-opening. And Jeff, look, obviously we have talked about the scenario of Eric McCoy moving to guard for 2 months now. We have been the first people to mention it, and we've been hammering it at home left and right. And I'm with you that McCoy, it seems like he's going to be the guy who's going to actually compete with Warford or take over for Warford, depending on the time frame you're talking about. And I found these comments actually interesting from Ruiz during the combine. And he talked about how he's a versatile player, this, that, and the other. But he has also said in the past that he was born to play center and that actually he didn't feel like he played very well at guard. So if he's saying those things publicly to media, I think center is the position for Ruiz, and McCoy would be the guy you'd move to guard either this year or for sure next year.
Yeah, and I think that flexibility they have is really valuable, because now you've got Andres Pete, who's also position flexible, and you can move these guys to multiple positions. That always helps when they have these injuries, which are inevitable in the NFL. And we've seen how much the Saints invest in their lines, both offensive and defensive lines. You just look at their track record the last few years, probably several years. I mean, almost everyone's been a big lineman on one side of the ball, with the exception of Marshawn Lattimore and Stephon Anthony. I think it's pretty much been an offensive or defensive lineman. And the thinking there is you just don't find those big guys that can play at the elite level late in the draft. Every once in a while you get a guy and develop him, and he comes through. But the days of like Jari Evans slipping through the cracks and falling to round five, that just doesn't happen very often. Too many teams are cognizant of the importance of the line, and it's just very hard to find them. I did a study over the weekend. If you look at the offensive interior offensive linemen, Larry, that made all pro at center or guard the last decade, the heavy preponderance of them were first and second round draft picks. It's almost all high round draft picks. Very few of them make it as a sixth or seventh rounder. So it makes sense to get those guys early and then hope you can find the other positions later in the draft. And looks like exactly what the Saints did.
Yeah, the norm isn't Jermon Bushrod and Evans and then Carl Nix. That's not the norm. And Zach Strief, none of those are really the norm. And all those guys outside of Evans, it took a while, say, for Bushrod. It took a while for Strief. Carl Nix dropped because Bo Pelini booted him from Pro Day because he got cited for something at a party. And Carl Nix saying, famously, it murdered his draft stock. But yeah, that's not the norm. And a lot of people found and pointed to that who were not upset. Who were upset that the Saints traded all their day three picks away to move up to take Adam Trautman, who we'll talk about in a little bit. But they're referring back to those picks. Well, you got to go that far back because that was a rarity. That hasn't happened in the last decade where the Saints have really found gems there. So I think some people are a little too tied to that, and that's not realistic. But yeah, Jeff, I'm with you. I think Ruiz is going to be a great pick, and look, I know that he's fired up to come here, so we'll certainly see about that. But of course, round two, the Saints with Zach Bond. And Jeff, that's someone who you brought up, I know, early in your mock drafts as someone there, and I know where you were coming from. You were keeping your eye on him. Even maybe in round one, you were kind of keeping your eye on him.
Well, he was in the Saints' top 40. We know that. Mickey Loomis said as much. A lot of teams thought he would go in the first round, right around where the Saints were picking. But I think some teams were scared off medically. He had a foot injury, a Liz Frank injury to his left foot that sidelined him for the whole 2017 season. There was also a diluted drug test at the combine that might have scared some teams off. The Saints obviously didn't feel that way in either case. This is a guy that they highly valued. I had heard that in the last few weeks before the draft, and He fit a lot of the things the Saints look for in their defensive players and linebackers. He's got the size prototype. It's 6'2", about 230 or so. That's right in the wheelhouse of what Jeff Ireland and Sean Payton have as a prototype at linebacker. And he's another guy that's position flexible. He can play all three linebacker positions. He can run. He's big enough to stand up against the run at the Sam spot. So I think that all those things were very attractive to them. And just on the heels of what they did a year ago with C.J. Gardner-Johnson, how they used him last year. If you ask somebody right now, what position does C.J. Gardner-Johnson play? You just say he's a daggone football player, right? I mean, he's a defensive football player. They play him all over the place, multiple positions. I think that's exactly what's going to happen with Zach Bond, and that's the way the NFL game is going. It is so hybridized now that the days of the Dome Patrol lining up in a 3-4 and staying in that with the same personnel, those days are long gone.
Yeah, and I didn't give Bond maybe enough credit for position flexibility than I should have probably going into the draft. You look at him and he has such big sack numbers and he's listed as a 3-4 outside linebacker. I'm thinking in terms, all right, this is like Kelavon Chason, and that's not the case, and that's not the way the Saints envision him. They could see him playing middle linebacker or strong side linebacker. And before we dive more into him, let's hear from someone who covered Zach Bond at Wisconsin. Of course, our own Jesse Temple of The Athletic. Let's hear what he has to say on Zach Bond.
Roughly 2.5 years ago, as Wisconsin outside linebacker Zach Bond rested on a couch and stared at his injured left foot elevated on a pillow, he briefly wondered whether he would ever be healthy enough to effectively play football again. Bond had suffered a torn Lisfranc ligament in the foot after a teammate rolled over it during preseason practice in 2017, which forced him to miss the season just as he was in position to make the 2-deep roster. He returned for the 2018 season fully healthy and with a renewed determination to prove himself. It didn't take long to see that his combination of quickness and athleticism could wreak havoc on opposing quarterbacks. Bond started all 27 games at outside linebacker for Wisconsin over his final two seasons in the program. As a redshirt junior in 2018, Bond finished third on the team with 63 tackles and added 7.5 tackles for loss, 2.5 sacks, and a team-high 8 quarterback hurries. But Bond became one of the best at his position in the country last season when he was the most experienced outside linebacker on the team. Bond amassed 76 tackles, tied for 7th in the FBS with 19.5 tackles for loss, and led his team with 10 quarterback hurries. He also recorded 12.5 sacks, which ranked as the third highest single-season total in school history. His play contributed to Wisconsin recording a single-season school record 51 sacks as a team. Bond was a consensus first-team All-America selection, achieving success with a slightly different body type from some of his predecessors at Wisconsin. Where others excelled at outside linebacker while weighing in the mid-240s, Bond entered his senior season at 235 pounds, and relied more on explosiveness and lateral speed to close off running lanes, cover tailbacks, match up with tight ends in space, or maneuver around offensive tackles. Bond, once a dual-threat quarterback in high school, possesses a body type and ability that lends itself to having some versatility in the pros. He said in March during his pro day at Wisconsin that NFL teams were looking at him either on the outside or the inside, depending on how he best fit into their scheme.
And Jeff, one of the interesting things, it's funny going back to what some of these players say at the combine in the media sessions. One of the things that Bond was asked about was actually playing inside linebacker. And he said that he relished doing that in the NFL, knowing that you need to be position flexible. And that's something that he feels like he could be an off-ball linebacker, not just someone who's a pass rusher, and the Saints see that as well. So to me, I don't know where that mixes and matches right now with, say, Alex Anzalone, and we don't know the injury status of Kiko Alonso. It sounds like Anzalone's healthy and he should be ready for training camp, but you always just assume he gets hurt. Alonso, we don't know if he'll be ready for training camp or even week one, but I feel like Zach Bond could be someone who, if you have your base defense, you could put him at the Sam linebacker spot, and then when you just go two linebackers on the field, that he probably, whether it's Mike or whatever, he could be one of the two linebackers on the field, say, with DeMario Davis.
No doubt, and I think if you remember correctly, the last few years, Dennis Allen's lined up in those packages with two linebackers And he's brought both of them on blitzes. We've seen it happen a number of times where they line up in the A gap. He and it, often it would be AJ Klein or Kiko Alonso in the A gap alongside of DeMario Davis, and they blitz those guys. And they've been successful sometimes. AJ Klein's made some big plays blitzing. I think Zach Bond will be perfect in that role because of those pass rush skills that he showed at Wisconsin that you talked about earlier. He came into the draft with really elite numbers as a rusher. So as a blitzer in that scheme, I think, you know, you just see there's just a lot of things, I think, a lot of skill traits that the Saints like from him. And I think he's a guy also that's going to have a high ceiling. You know, he came into college as a quarterback. He's obviously a very good athlete. And I know he played the same position in Wisconsin that Joe Schobert played. He was drafted by the Browns, and he had to make a transition to a linebacker spot as well. And he ended up making a Pro Bowl, just signed a big contract in free agency. So if they, I think that helped them see a Wisconsin guy playing that kind of joker position and making the transition to linebacker at the NFL level.
Yeah, Zach Bond mentioned that a good bit, actually, in his interviews, even going back to the combine. Of course, knowing that pedigree, he started mentioning that. But the one thing he did say while he was at the combine was that he did not do a lot of pass coverage. So that might not be something that we see the Saints use with him, probably in the same light as AJ Klein. If he's covering someone in passing situations, you're probably in trouble. So I don't feel like the Saints will ever want to try to put him in a spot where, at least initially, where they're going to use him in pass coverage. You probably see DeMario Davis or some of the safeties moving out and doing that sort of thing, whether it be Malcolm Jenkins or C.J. Gardner-Johnson. But I would not put early on probably Zach Bond in some of those situations. So, and, but yeah, let's move on to round three. Adam Trautman, tight end, Dayton. People think of Dayton as a basketball school, and rightfully so. D3 football school, but you could even just look at our guy, Dane Brugler, our draft guru, of course, who was unbelievable and has done an awesome job and will forever do an awesome job for us because we value him so highly here, that he pegged Trautman as their number one tight end on his big board, the number 56 prospect overall. The Saints use all of their draft capital on day three. And don't forget, they did get a seventh round pick when they traded up to go get Zach Bond. But they used all four day three picks to go get Adam Trautman. And Jeff, that's something that you and me discussed a decent bit, that that could be a sneaky need in this draft.
Yeah, I love that pick and I love that decision. I alluded to this in my final mock draft. This was a draft where the Saints needed to get three players basically in the top 100. This pick ends up being number 105, so it's close enough basically in the first three rounds. Because this team is so deep and so talented, this isn't like the 2006 team where a guy like Marcus Colston could make the team as a seventh rounder or Zach Strief would make it. Zach Strief would never have made this team right now as a seventh rounder. He would have ended up on the practice squad and maybe never had the career that he had, because this team is just a completely different animal. They're so much better at their depth at so many different positions that, and we saw it happen a couple of years ago, all those mid-round guys, none of them made the roster. They ended up on other teams. And I think that's what would have happened to these late round picks. And so it's smart for the Saints to address a position like tight end that's so important in their scheme and have some insurance and some long-term stability at the position, considering Jared Cook's age. I mean, this is his last year of his contract. I think he's 32, 33. And, you know, now you've got a guy that you can groom behind him and potentially use him much in the same way as I think they used Dan Arnold over the last few years, as kind of almost a hybrid wide receiver tight end. They can split him out. He's a terrific athlete. He also came to college as a former quarterback, so he's a very good athlete. And I love that pick as well. I loved everything they did in this draft. I have no absolutely no complaints about anything they did. I think they needed to wheel and deal and end up with three guys in their top 40 and three guys in our Dane Brugler's top 56 in the whole draft. And considering what they had to go into the draft, the capital they had, that's pretty amazing work.
Should the Saints hire Dane Brugler since he had basically the same sort of draft board as maybe the Saints did? Yeah, just goes to show you that if you're looking for draft coverage, Dane's our guy. Hey, he might be a guest on the Duncan Holder podcast in the near future. Just saying, just throwing that out there. But as far as Trautman, just Jeff, I've used this analogy a lot to where I would reference back to 2010 with the Saints and their tight ends. Bringing a young guy, back then they did it with Jimmy Graham in the third round, and he was kind of a relative, unknown basketball player going to play in Miami. This one is a D3 guy who definitely has talent, but they take him in the third round. And back in 2010, that's when you had Shockey and you had David Thomas. And so Trautman doesn't have to play this gigantic role right away. He can play a la Jimmy Graham, but not the same sort of role. So seems like they're using the same method a decade later. And to me, I think it's a smart move. And I'm with you, Jeff. You look at this trade value. You look at the chart, and I put it out there right after they made the pick. People want to scoff at the picks. Well, if you look at the trade chart value, which a lot of teams basically use as a guideline, that third-round pick is worth more than the other four picks combined on the trade chart. So if you're looking for, oh my gosh, that's not good value, well, actually, the Saints, in terms of trade value, won that trade. So, and then we'll see what happens with Trautman going forward. But Jeff, as we get to our final pick, where no one thought the Saints would mortgage something for later to go find your guy, your new guy. I mean, this should be number two on your list now. Now that Taysom's number one, where you're getting money, I'm surprised you didn't like throw a party for Tommy Stevens. Taysom Hill 2.0, first started at Penn State as a quarterback, transferred to Mississippi State, and the Saints are looking at him as Taysom Hill 2.0. Tommy Stevens is looking at himself 2.0, Taysom Hill 2.0.
It's pretty remarkable. Like, I did not see that coming at all. That was a complete curveball. I looked at Tommy Stevens when I was doing my pre-draft coverage and just totally dismissed him. Did not think of him in that role. Sean Payton clearly saw, has a vision for him as another Taysom Hill kind of athlete, gadget player. Makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? I mean, what we're seeing here in every one of these picks is athleticism, size, speed, and versatility. And it'll be interesting to see once he gets into camp what he looks like in that role. But I'm curious to see if he makes the final roster. It's going to be very difficult. Correct me if I'm wrong, Larry, have they ever carried four quarterbacks on the active roster in a season? It seems pretty remote that that's going to happen.
No, they prefer two over four.
Right.
So, but if Stevens were be on the 53-man, I doubt he would be necessarily considered a quarterback. But also, maybe teams forget about him and don't try to pick him up after in waivers. And so maybe they're hoping to stash him practice squad at some point. But I could just tell you this. Look, Tommy Stevens was nowhere near as prolific a college quarterback as Taysom Hill was. I mean, they moved him out of quarterback at Mississippi State, his second school, because he wasn't very good. I mean, let's be really honest about this. So this might not even be where, wow, he takes snaps at quarterback,
right,
and he might throw passes. I don't think that's going to be the vision for him at all, unless it's like once in a blue moon. I think he has more to go to ever really consider being Taysom Hill. And people are wondering, well, why didn't they wait to get him as an undrafted rookie? I'm willing to bet plenty of dollars that Tommy Stevens was probably going to sign somewhere else. They probably got wind of that, and the Saints said, screw this, we're going to go draft him, and he's going to be ours. And so that's probably, in my eyes, the way that situation went down.
Yeah, and I think people forget also that the Saints have another guy on the roster that's sort of like that, and he's kind of an overlooked guy because they signed him last year, Jason Vanderland. I know they got him, I think, away from the Patriots at one time. He's a backup tight end, very similar type of guy, has some quarterback experience in his background, and about the same size as Taysom Hill and Stevens. And I think when they brought him in, they saw another potential candidate for that role. So clearly, Sean Payton, the offensive coaching staff, feel like that's a valuable role going forward. And it's not just going to be a one-time deal with Taysom Hill. They're going to continue to use that as a, you know, kind of a one-off surprise look for opposing defenses to have to prepare for throughout Taysom Hill's tenure, assume he goes forward longer than just 1 year.
Well, Jeff, you're assuming that, say, Taysom's going to be the quarterback till, what, 2030? So,
yes.
You know, hey, maybe Tommy Stevens is a 10-year veteran. We never know.
Global domination begins in 2021.
Boy, you'll be wearing like you'll be passing out pins like old, like high school election, just vote for Taysom like every day with balloons and everything. You're going to be hammering in campaign signs. Your guy Taysom Hill. You're never going to get away from.
If he fails, I'm probably going to hear about it, aren't I? It's probably going to be a long.
Probably is the understatement. Of your life.
You're right.
Understatement of your life. There's
no doubt
about it.
I'm out on that limb. There's no doubt.
Yeah. I think that limb is definitely pretty sturdy at this point that he's going to be the quarterback. So I think you're on that train and you're going to be that guy. So we'll see how this thing goes forward. But again, if you missed any of our incredible coverage, please go check it out. TheAthletic.com/New Orleans, TheAthletic.com/Duncan Holder. You can get on there and get all of our pods. Subscribe through that link. Get 40% off your annual subscription. We've got plenty of coverage coming post-draft that is coming your way, not just this week, not just next week, but in the coming months. Even though we don't know exactly when the Saints are going to get on the field, we have all kinds of coverage coming. And, of course, podcasts. We've got plenty of things that we're lining up as we move forward for the Duncan Holder podcast. So jump on there. Like I said, theathletic.com/Duncan Holder. Or you can go Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your pods. Rate, review, subscribe, do all those good things. So we'll be back with all of our coverage and then more podcasts coming up as we move along this offseason. So I want to thank our producer, Danielle, as always. And for Jeff Duncan, I'm Larry Holder. Thanks for joining us here on the Duncan Holder Podcast on the Athletics Podcast Network.